You've been listening to Pioneer Radio on CFRU 93.3. Join us next week when we ask, what are you doing in Guelph, and how did you get here? Don't forget, if you still love the internet after today's program, you can check us out at pioneerradio.wordpress.com. See you next week. Picking up roses, there's never been such grave a matter as comparing our new brand name, black sunglasses, all these poses, such beautiful poses, makes any boy feel as pretty as princes.
Welcome to the Working Week. This is Scotty Hertz here, and I'm just going to set the controls for the Heart of the Sun and play a little bit of music. You know, I got to tell you, a couple weeks ago I went to get gas, and I went in, and the guy started waving his hands, and I was the only person there, and he said, cash only. I said, what do you mean with cash only? He said, total system failure. So that's my catch-all now for when things just go a little bit awry. Total system failure. Welcome to Total System Failure, a new show here on CFRU 93.3 FM. No, I'm just joking, honestly. Let's do something else for a few minutes, and I'll get back to you. Please hold.
Asked its ethics committee to take immediate steps to discover if members of the FIFA executive committee have violated its code of ethics. Two committee members have been accused by a British newspaper of offering to sell their votes to countries bidding to host future World Cups. BBC News.
This is World Briefing from the BBC. I'm Frederick Dove. The Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is in Tehran for talks with Iranian leaders as he pursues his bid to stay in office. It's now more than 7 months since Iraq's inconclusive general elections in which he was the runner-up. Neighbouring Iran wields strong influence among Mr. Maliki's Shiite community. Jim Muir reports from Baghdad.
Mr. Maliki was accorded a reception befitting an official visit by an important head of government, including an audience with Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. The Ayatollah stressed the need for Iraq to form a government as soon as possible, and he blamed most of its problems on the Americans. But publicly, the Iranians were refreshed.
The landlord's here to visit. They're blasting disco down below. I'm doubling the rent, cause I'm building some dams. You're gonna help me buy city hall. Oh, we can. You know we can. Oh, we can. You know we can. Let's fix a landlord ban. I tell him turn on the water. I tell him turn on the heat. Tell me all you ever do is complain, yeah. Then they search the place when I'm not here. But we can. You know we can. But we can. You know we can. Let's rinse a landlord. Let's rinse a landlord. Let's rinse a landlord, man. Let's wish the landlord, let's wish the landlord, let's wish the landlord.
The C.J. Mountfort Centre is a resource centre for people of colour and Aboriginal peoples at the University of Guelph. This is where we all unite. The Mountfort Centre, located in McKinnon Room 54 and 55, provides a microwave, two computers and a fridge among other resources. The centre is a place to study, sleep or relax. It's a place for great conversation. If you want to vent, share experience, good or bad, this is the place for you. You meet great people, and it's just an overall awesome environment. Don't hesitate to drop in anytime before 10 p.m., and you're sure to meet a smiling face. For more information, call us at 519-824-4120, extension 56911, or visit us at www.uoguelph.ca/Mountfort or join our Facebook group.
I was very tempted to go to the C.J. Mountfort set and use the microwave just because that's really awesome. It's, oh, I don't know, 26 on Monday, October 18th. Welcome to the Working Week. And, yeah, I was trying to check the weather, but it seems it's member dedicated. I don't know, should I make some weather up? Partly cloudy with a few sunny periods, chance of ennui. No, I don't know. What is the weather? What is the weather but a state of mind? Yeah, so you're not getting the weather either. So, Sister Mary Carl, before it happened on, what would the date be, on Thanksgiving Day? Or no, Thanksgiving Sunday, I suppose it would be the migrant workers' 50-kilometer pilgrimage to freedom, which drew attention to the dehumanizing conditions people working through the Canadian temporary workers programs, the problems that they face. Before the march happened, Mary Carl was speaking to one of the organizers, and it goes into a bit of detail as to what the march was all about and some background on that. And I think I promised it to you 2-3 weeks ago, so here it is. And yeah, here we go.
On Friday, September 10th, two Jamaican migrant agricultural workers died as a result of injuries suffered at Filsinger Farms near Owen Sound, Ontario. The Ministry of Labour has not made the details of the accident public, but the Jamaican government is reporting that Raiston White and Paul Roach may have died from the inhalation of toxic fumes. Justicia for Migrant Workers, a migrant worker advocacy collective, is calling on the provincial government to do more to protect people who come to Canada through the Temporary Foreign Worker Program. Sazna Miranda Leal is an organizer with the Toronto contingent of Justicia for Migrant Workers. She's on the phone with me this evening from Toronto. Hi, Sazna.
Hi, how are you?
Great. What are the latest details of the most recent tragedy that has happened to people working under Canada's Temporary Foreign Worker Program?
Well, unfortunately, those two migrant farm workers from Jamaica passed away from a workplace accident. They were pumping out apple cider, and the pump broke. It got some pieces of apple or something got stuck in it, and they tried fixing it manually, and so they went into the chamber that they were pumping, and so they ran out of oxygen. So they passed away, and these are not the first migrant workers that are part of the program that have passed away. It happens very often, and Justicia has always tried to be there in the community and help out the families. So this time we are demanding that the Ministry of Labor make changes to the program, and we're also demanding that there's a coroner's inquest started about the deaths, which rarely happens or never happens. Their employers are not required to be involved in one.
These two men, they were working under the Seasonal Agricultural Workers Program, and
right.
So they were working in an apple farm?
Yeah, it was an organic farm where they make apple cider, apple butter, that kind of thing.
Hmm. How has the Ontario government responded at all? Have they done anything to...
The Ontario government hasn't responded at all. We held a rally Friday 2 weeks ago in front of the Ministry of Labor on Dundas and University, downtown Toronto, demanding that the coroner's inquest be started, and we asked a visual, brought some bloody apples to give to the minister, and then we tried to give it to them, and his guards were very adamant about not letting us in, so he didn't even see us. I mean, technically, anybody can go see the minister, but I guess not us.
And I heard that you tried to get in, but they stopped.
They shut down the elevators, yeah, and they threatened with arresting us, the police did, which is really sad because they show up, you know, to deal with a community group when really they should be doing a coroner's inquest about this farm and why people, you know, trying to find out why people are dying in this workplace.
Uh-huh,
farm workers are dying.
Yes, I read on your website, justiciaformigrantworkers.org, that Justicia for Migrant Workers is pressing the Ontario government for snap inspections and
That's
a criminal investigation in these cases, in addition to the coroner's inquest. And you've mentioned that historically this has never happened. Why is this so?
Well, in general, we think there's an incorrect approach to this situation. The reason why we're asking for snap inspections is that workplaces are sometimes or generally inspected for health and safety purposes before everybody comes, before farm workers come from the Caribbean and from Mexico. But then they're never inspected, or they're very rarely inspected while people are working there, which, you know, is very different when people are living there and people are working there. So that's why snap inspections are important. Many times conditions develop in the workplace that are very dangerous, and they're not caught by inspectors. So we want health and safety standards to be enforced. The second problem is that usually the blame gets put on the worker. In this case, for example, there were a few articles that were put out by several newspapers where the owner of the farm was quoted saying they knew not, you know, the farm workers knew not to go in there, but they went in anyway. So that clearly shows a paternalistic attitude towards them. It sounds like they're speaking about children. You know, I told them not to go in there, but they did it anyway. Clearly, they didn't know they could die. They were grown men. If they had known, they wouldn't have gone in there. So there's this problem by this attitude by the community and by the government that when there's an accident in the workplace, it's the worker's fault, when really it is up to the employer to provide proper training and proper safety measures, right?
From what you know, what are some of the other things that are creating a very dangerous work environment and causing these injuries and deaths for the migrant workers?
In this case, this was a rare case because it was an apple cider farm. But for example, well, starting from the most basic, which is the actual work, back-breaking work, literally, it's repetitive work that requires people to bend down really low for many, many hours every day, you know, for months and on. It's very, very heavy on your joints, on your back, on your knees if you're bending down all day. Sometimes they need to go from hot to cold, from hot back again, and so people's bodies, you know, have to take a lot of strain. But also, on top of that, there's pesticides in many, many workplaces. This one was an organic farm, so it didn't have pesticides, but many others do, and we see it all the time. There's no equipment or very inadequate equipment provided for farm workers, and bad training or no training or training in languages that aren't their own, so it's basically useless. So So that's another thing, pesticides and the training related to that. Training also connects to machinery, and machinery that's dangerous to use. If people aren't properly trained to do it, they might have serious accidents, which has happened before a lot with tractors, with machines for mushroom farms, for example, is one that I can think of that's really dangerous. And then it's all sorts of different things related to working in a factory, in a greenhouse, right?
Mm-hmm. We're talking right now about people working under the seasonal agricultural worker program, specifically one of the temporary foreign worker programs in Canada. And Justicia for Migrant Workers has criticized the temporary foreign worker program in Canada. And so connecting with the explaining the dangerous aspects of the working conditions, what are the stipulations of the program that make working under it dehumanizing, particularly in the seasonal agricultural workers program? Because I know Justicia primarily works with people working under the seasonal agricultural workers program.
Mm-hmm. Well, Justicia is actually, yes, historically we work with the SOP, meaning the seasonal agricultural workers program, but also right now we're organizing with many people from temporary foreign worker programs, coming from Thailand and the Philippines mainly. But there's people from many, many other countries. I think a similarity that exists between the two is the disproportionate amount of control and power given to the employer through the structure of the program. So let me explain what I mean is an employer is giving full responsibility over the training and over the housing of the SOP workers, and with almost no supervision from anybody, right? So it's not that people are inherently bad. It's that when you have a program that is set to give certain people this disproportionate amount of control and power over another group of people, and then you add in, you know, the racialization of labor, it's disastrous, right? So workers are denied the access to services and systematically denied the access to services, and employers are systematically given power to repatriate people, to fire people, to force people to work under dangerous conditions. And so the way the program is set up, people are very vulnerable and people are denied access to their rights and to the services that they deserve. And that's why we think the structure of the program itself is what makes these dangerous conditions even more dangerous, and what makes people stick in these workplaces and stay there and endure these harsh conditions.
I was listening to an interview that you had done with Red Eye Co-op Radio earlier, and I was wondering what you meant by the SOP program being gendered and racialized. So in what ways is the work under the SOP gendered and racialized?
To start with, we have to look at history and realize that it is the same bodies that were exploited in the past through colonial processes that are exploited now through neoliberal systems. It is a very racialized workforce coming from Latin America and the Caribbean. The SOP program is set up so that workers come from a very specific background, from a very specific socioeconomic group, with very specific skills and schooling. So there's a very, there's a power dynamic that goes on when you have a highly racialized workforce coming up that has also been hit by colonial abuse in the past, right, and oppression. So Caribbean workers come to Canada and relate these experiences to slavery, and they tell us every day, we thought slavery was over, and we see that this is our history repeating. And Mexican workers see it differently. They see the colony as well. I mean, slavery was a little different in Mexico, but so they say, this is slave work, and we see our history repeating over and over and over, right? That's what I mean by a racialized workforce. And gendered, well, it's very interesting. There are women that come through the SOP, and they get put in very gender-specific roles in the workplace. They're made, they're generally hired to pack flowers and pack fruit and do things that are allegedly more for women, that require more dexterous hands. And, mm-hmm. In the workplace, it's very, very obvious how the workplace is divided. The workforce is divided, and men and women are treated very differently. They often have curfews, and they have limits about who they can see and what time they can go out, who they can go out with, how they can express their sexuality or not express their sexuality. Sexual health is often a problem. And so they suffer from a whole other layer of problems on top of the racialization of labor mm-hmm. for being women.
What are some of the common reasons as to why people feel the need to work under these programs?
Well, it's very simple. There's very high rates of unemployment in Mexico, but also they're promised ideal jobs in Canada, right? They're promised lots of money, great working conditions, you know, fair wages, a contract that seems very reasonable, but later on they realize it's breached very often. Also, there's this notion in Mexico and in the Caribbean that Canada is a humanitarian nation where things are very just and equitable, and that it's, you know, like the American dream, but the Canadian dream. And so people come and sadly realize that it's not like that, and what they were expecting is not here, but still they are pushed to work these jobs because it's the only way that they can provide for the family.
Mm-hmm. And people working under the Temporary Foreign Worker Program, including the SOP, they're not allowed to stay in Canada permanently, so how long are they allowed to stay here?
It depends. The Seasonal Agricultural Worker Program is very season-based, right? So people come from anywhere from 5 weeks to 8 months, depending on the crop, depending on the job that they got. And they come and they have to leave immediately after their contract is done. Usually, I guess they could stay because they have a work permit valid until a certain date. But again, it's employers that have the power over that. Employers buy the ticket, employers put them in a cab, or, you know, have their driver take them to the airport and put them on a plane. So employers also have powers over when people can go home and when they can't. And through the Temporary Foreign Worker Program, people generally have 2-year work permits. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they can renew them, and sometimes they have to go home and process a new one.
Do you know how many people come to Canada under the Temporary Foreign Worker Program or the SOP program every year? And from
the
where?
The SOP program brings more than 18,000 people. And in general, temporary foreign workers add up anywhere from 320,000 to sometimes 400,000, depending on which industries you count and several details like that. The SOP brings people from Mexico, Jamaica, Barbados, sometimes Grenada, San Vincent, Trinidad and Tobago.
Thanks very much to Mary Carl for providing that for today. And no doubt, as well as you, will have more on that story and more in the future here on The Working Week. This is indeed The Working Week on CFRU 93.3 FM. I've just got a little bit of time here to get to some announcements, and then that is it for me today. What's coming up? Shout Out It Out is coming with Bocce Friday, November 5th at The Vinyl. Dance Until You Puke, $15 in advance, $18 at the door. The same night, Le Sick, Polydactyl Hearts, and Hello Adventure at Dublin Street United, which is 68 Suffolk West, doors at 8:30. It's like Battle of the Shows. It's like everything's happening on the 5th. Don't forget, Thursday, October 28th is the Glam Slam Ball, starring the, Optimum Ultimate, King Neptune and the Tridents, and also Sheezer. It's generating a lot of excitement. Toronto's best all-female Weezer cover band. I don't know how many there are, but I've heard good things about the Sheezer. E-Bar, as usual, 41 Quebec Street, Galpi. 10 p.m., all ages, adult accompaniment, all ages and licensed, so glam and slam. It's Queer Identities Week. Not this week. Yes, it's this week. So he's like, it is! Yeah, it's this week. Full events here. You should go see this website because, I know. For a full description of events, search Queer Identities Week, Intersecting Identities on Facebook because there's so many events that blow your mind. And the Anti-Colonial Thanksgiving Dinner is this Friday, October 22nd at the Guelph Youth Music Center, 75 Carden, dinner at 6, and speakers galore coming. So more info on that, I can't tell you. But go there. It'll be awesome. And I know who supplied the potatoes, because it was me. Some of them, anyway. At least 100 pounds. But yeah, so that's all I've got for today. I'm going to leave you with Cambridge, who are not from Cambridge. I thought they were, but they're actually from BC. This is from their new release called This Is Not a Victory. This song is called Hole in the Ground. P.S. There's some choice language in this, so get some earmuffs for the kiddies and crank it, because it does indeed rock. Thanks for listening this week to The Working Week. Hopefully talk to you next week. No, next week is Election Radio. For your full election coverage, tune in to CFRU starting at, I believe, 8 o'clock whenever the polls close, and we'll give you full coverage. And tune in to the final show tomorrow morning before the election. I believe the, I was going to say the Council of Canadians, wrong! Guelph Civic League are going to be in with their voting results and much, much more. So I'll be back in one of these chairs tomorrow morning with Jan Hall and Oliver Rockside. So check that out tomorrow morning, bright and early at 7, from 7 to 9. And I better get to the song, because I'm running out of time. Here is Cambridge. Listener discretion is advised.
Went up. Progress has now been.